Welcome to the committee. House file 640. Since we don't have a quorum yet, we'll wait to move your bill. So Representative Hollis, why don't you introduce your testifiers or proceed whichever way you want.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members, and thank you again, Representative Rukavina, for the privilege to do this. I do have two people with me. One is Gloria Dudley, representing the Leech Lake Tribe, and Mitch Loomis, who is the current volunteer president for the organization. We've in the process of building the community center ice hockey rink, and it just to make it brief, the approximate cost is $4 million. The community, in many ways, has raised approximately 2.7 in that neighborhood. We're looking for some help from the state. I know that mostly the state says it has to be a regional impact, but this will affect 8 school districts, the Leech Lake Reservation, and those residents there. It stretches all the way to, from Bemidji to Pine River. A lot of people are involved with this. And with that, I will cut my speech short, and I will let Gloria Dudley go first. And we promise to keep everything short for you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Gloria Dudley. I'm a member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe from northern Minnesota. And we have been working as a tribe government with the Walker committee here to plan for this Walker Community Center, which is dearly needed in our community. We have one of our main target areas is working with youth and providing services to our youth. 2 years ago, the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe entered into a memorandum of agreement with the Boys and Girls Club, and we have supported their activities on our reservation in a few of our that have been placed in a few of our schools, and our Bena Community Center, they're also planning on going there. We have totally supported the planning and the implementation of this new community center because it is going to serve many of our people also. I just want to say that they have our full support, and I'm hoping that this will be a positive move. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have one more person that will be very brief also.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Just identify yourself.
My name is Mitch Loomis, volunteer president of the Walker Area Community Center Board. And Mr. Chair, members, if there are no more questions, I don't think I need to make any comments. I think Representative Howes summed up the project well.
Okay, members, any questions on the bill at all? Well, if that's the case, Representative Detmer, would you move House File 640 for Representative House?
Mr. Chair, I so move.
Thank you. Representative House moves House File 640 be recommended to pass and be included for possible inclusion in the omnibus higher education bill. Any other questions? Representative Norton.
Chair Rukavina and others, I don't know if this is a question for the testifiers or perhaps for the chair. I notice it's appropriating $650,000 from the general fund to deed. But I'm wondering, is this making use of theoretically the one-time extra $1 billion that we have? Is this, it doesn't use the word bonding funds in there. Would this be part of the bonding bill? I'm just...
Representative Norton, no. As this is right now, it's a general fund appropriation. Run through Department of Employment and Economic Development, and you know, that's what it is. Whether it's one-time money or found in their current budget or wherever we decide to find it, if this bill is included in the omnibus bill, that would be up to the decision of this committee.
Okay, thanks.
And
continue.
Representative Martin, yes. And you know, other bills that are going to be coming in front of us that are asking for money, it's the same question. Where are we going to be getting the money from? That's a decision we will make collectively as a committee as we put the omnibus bill together. Go ahead, Representative.
I understand that. Chair Rukavina, help me understand how I justify or decide, or we as a body, not just me, when something is appropriate for bonding. As I look at my community's requests that are coming through for bonding, this really is very similar. Would we argue that this is indeed a regional or statewide need? that's where those bills are going. And so how do you determine, how do I determine what things are appropriate for just general fund deed to be given to deed and what is appropriate for bonding?
President Norton, that would be, I guess, your determination to decide that as we are putting the bill together. I mean, you may at that time make a motion to not include that because you think it's more appropriate for a bonding bill. I believe that this facility itself is well on its way to being funded from other sources.
Mr. Chairman, I could answer that question. The reason that we can't use capital investment money at this time is because it's a nonprofit entity that owns the facility. We are talking to the city of Walker. If it need be that we have to go the way of bonds, we will make arrangements with the city of Walker to take over the property, and then the nonprofit group would simply run the facility. But that's an avenue that we haven't looked at totally yet. We thought the way we're going now is the best.
Much better answer than I didn't know it was a nonprofit itself. So that would answer the bonding question, because it has to be a public entity under state constitution to be bonded. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious as to why it's in the higher ed and workforce development. Is there a
Representative Severson, because it's an appropriation to the Department of Employment and Economic Development, which is or a request from them, which is in this division.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Haas.
I was just wondering if you've looked into any of the tax abatement programs or programs that might work also for this.
Representative Haas?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Haas. We've looked at many avenues. I have a bill that would, a capital investment bill, $2.5 million to the Amateur Sports Commission for Mighty Ducks program. I have another bill, $2.5 million to deed for hockey rinks. We're looking at a local option sales tax for the city of Walker that would be for community event centers, hockey rinks, and infrastructure. So there are probably four or five bills that are in the process. You haven't seen the last of me, Representative Haas.
Representative Haas.
Thank you, and I do think life is a bowl full of Larrys, but we'll talk about it later.
Thank you. Members, we have, for the audience, you know, it's Larry Haas, Larry Haas, and Larry Haas.
Oh, boy.
We have a problem with which Larry is Larry.
Mr. Chairman, that's why the song Hats Off to Larry was such a hit.
Mr. Chair, my real name is Larry.
Just pile right in.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, thank you, Ember, or thank you, testifiers, and Representative Hong.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I will now take House File 34 that's off of the table, and we're back on the table. Representative Khan, come forward. Members, you may recall last Thursday that we said that we would start with, that we had taken public testimony, and we would start with amendments. So I guess that's what we are going to do. Representative Khan?
Chairman, I would like to bring Dr. Purpo, who was with me last week, is not here. I would like to bring someone of, I know that you don't want more public testimony. I would like to bring Dr. Jeffrey Khan, not a relative, who's head of the Stem Cell Advisory Committee, just up to sit with me to answer questions. I don't
Representative Khan, that is absolutely fine with me. Representative Stevenson, did you have an amendment to begin with, or I think we had amendments in the packet last week that were ready to go.
Yes, sir.
And so I guess I'm going to entertain the A1 amendment, members. Representative Khan, do you have an A1 amendment?
Okay.
Yeah, she has one now. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I never really got an answer to my initial question, which was how do we get around statute 145.422 and 421? Perhaps Representative Khan, the author of the bill, would like to explain that.
I think you did have, I'm not sure I have a copy of that with me right now, but the I think we completely understand. I was one of the two people who was here in the House when that passed, and that specifically talks to advanced fetal life, and it specifically talks to all of the things that are indicated, electroencephalographic activity and things, are all things that are not at all questions in the use of stem cells. So it has no bearing. That the definitions in there and the description of what's not allowed in that has absolutely no bearing on the stem cell debate at all.
Go ahead, Representative Severson.
Thank you. And I guess I'm kind of curious when you say that, Representative Kahn, because this was taken up by Representative Wilkin and Senator Neville, who had gone to the University of Minnesota and requested to meet with, I believe it's Dr. Seller.
Sarah.
Thank you. And requested that there be a legal ruling on this. The university refused to give a ruling.
Yeah.
They went to the Attorney General. The Attorney General refused to give a ruling. So I'm curious as to how that you're coming up with just an easy interpretation that says this is the way it is.
Well, we have a procedure for getting a ruling from the Attorney General. I guess the county attorney has to bring a criminal and their more criminal case and take it to the Attorney General's office. People don't, you know, I can give you a ruling because I'm allowed to just talk from the top of my head and tell you what was said in debate when that was passed and the kind of things that were talked about. But people who give legal rulings have to do it under a very much more stricter requirements than I do. And I think that the people who need to be asked said that they would not, you know, that they would not do it. And there has been legal counsel has told, like Dr. Purpo, who's still kind of amazed that she was being threatened with a crime while she sat here, was Dr. Purpo says that she was assured by legal counsel that everything she's doing is correct and is within Minnesota law. So just because they don't answer a legislator who has a really weird bill, you know, doesn't mean that they're supposed to.
And Madam Chair, to that point, I think there are numbers of people who have been asked this question, and just to come into committee and say this is the way it is, you know, to me it's a little out of touch. I guess the question is it a human conceptus?
Representative Tanney.
But no, the issue, if you look at the language in that, the language that you're talking about in that and the examples that are given in that law, which I know I have somewhere in this pile, are totally unrelated to the issue of stem cell debate. And I'm very comfortable in saying that. And I think if you ask, you know, and I think if you might get that answer too from other people if you were to ask that.
Representative Kahn, and Representative Kahn, in 1973, did they know about stem cell research?
No, of course not. But when you look at the language of that bill, what they're clearly talking about is the latest day. They certainly knew what an embryo was. They knew about implantation. They're clearly, if you read that law carefully, it, you know, I know we had it in front of us last week, and I don't know if I have it. I don't know where I quite have it now. That it's clearly clearly refers to late stages of development. Every word in that law, if you look at it, does.
I understand we're going to disagree on this, and I would say disagree vehemently because I have not gotten a personal or a legal opinion on this. Number one, the three issues that were stipulated in the law said moving, electroencephalographic, or the other was electrocardiographic.
Yes, and none of
obviously the first two don't match. The first one, however, if you've got a cell, and the question to Dr. Purple was, does it move? Or is it alive? She said yes. Does it move? Would you use a dead embryonic cell, a dead embryo, to perform this research? That's the question.
If the answer to that is then you're not going to do any bone, if you're using that kind of definition, you're not going to do any bone marrow transplants, you're not going to do anything else. That's irrelevant. The use of the word living is irrelevant to this discussion.
The word, excuse me, Madam Chair.
Representative, I'm back.
The operative word in this particular bill is embryonic, not adult. It's embryonic. Is this a human conceptus. Is this an embryo? I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Representative,
do we have an amendment before us?
We do have an amendment, A31.
A1 amendment.
A1.
And Mr. Chair, to the amendment, the issue being that there is research, and I do have a handout, if I can get a page to come forward. There is research that is being done that basically says that it is not required to destroy the embryo in order to do the embryonic stem cell research. It has been successfully since 2005 successfully implemented. Now, when we talked to Dr. Purpo in this particular instance, we asked whether or not this kills the embryo. It in fact does, which I still contend in fact is in violation of statute. This particular procedure is something that I believe that we as Minnesotans who have a law in the books that says that you cannot destroy a human conceptus, an embryo, for research purposes, violates that law. This particular amendment says you can do this research if you do not destroy the human embryo. And so this particular article basically says that that procedure is, in fact, viable today, and that's the avenue that we should be going down with this particular bill. The other issues I have with this bill is, as was stated, this bill as it's written is a Trojan horse. This, you know, when it says that there is a there are legal implications, when you read through the bill, it's a wide open bill. I mean, there is no vision for what we can do and what we cannot do in the future. So how do you violate something that has no parameters? And so I guess this amendment goes to try and bring it into line with current statute. And I would also say that there are other problems with this particular bill, and my hopes are that we could fix it as it goes along, if it goes along. And so I would take questions on this amendment, Mr. Chair.
Questions on the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative Severson. I guess I just have a question. I know that you've left out a couple of the somatic cell nuclear transplantation. Could you just explain that to me, please? About the deletion.
That's correct. And as we heard in testimony last Thursday, somatic cell nuclear transfer is cloning. And cloning is currently in violation, I believe, of the there's a national statute, isn't it? It's something we don't want to do. I mean, obviously. I
think in the case of me and Representative Kahn, but maybe there's a
too much of a good thing.
I think at the federal level, we've all already established policy that cloning is not authorized in the research, particularly even with the stem cell research. So this kind of cuts to the chase, and then basically says that particular procedure is not. It doesn't say it, but it doesn't include it in the allowable
means. Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just so Representative Severson understands that as you continue to turn around, your words are not getting recorded for posterity, so it doesn't matter to me, but we keep getting told we're supposed to speak into the mic.
Good point, thank you.
Frankly, I agree with Representative Kahn, though I have not been here that long, that I don't think this particular law pertains to stem cell and the arguments that are being heard here have not convinced me of that. And counsel last week gave us definition of what she believed the law meant, and I'm just wondering if she could repeat, not verbatim, because I don't expect you to remember, but give us another rendition of how you understood this law.
Mr. Chair and members, the law has two parts to it. 145.421, which lays out definitions, and there is a definition of human conceptus and a definition of living. The definition of living was described earlier, and human conceptus is defined to be any human organism conceived in the human body or produced in an artificial environment other than the human body from fertilization through the first 265 days. The acts that have a penalty attached to them under the next part of the law is using a living human conceptus for any type of scientific laboratory research or other experimentation, except to protect the life or health of the conceptus or conceptus provided. And it makes it a gross misdemeanor, and it seems that the key to this law is in those definitions of living and human conceptus.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions on the amendment? If not, Representative Kahn.
A few words to it. First of all, the amendment essentially got the bill, so just vote against the bill instead of accept the amendment. The information that was passed out, the authors of this did issue a correction to say that all the embryos were destroyed in terms of the process. I will point out that the language in the Stevenson Amendment goes far further than the restrictions that President Bush has put on August 9th, 2001. So, for example, these restrictions, if this were put in, this would make Minnesota far worse, not only not a leader in the country, but much worse than any other state in the country. And we can have a discussion of why one needs SCNT. I will, Mr. Chairman, I hope we'll vote down this amendment. Mr. Chairman, I have three amendments, which I've at several times have said I was willing to offer at any time, and, never got any idea, finally got an idea from some people. One would be an anti-cloning, make it clear, anti-cloning. The reason I didn't offer these amendments was that I didn't think that they were necessary, because they are forbidden by federal law, they are forbidden by international agreements and so forth, and one of them doesn't make sense on a scientific, what we're trying to forbid couldn't occur on a scientific basis, and I always consider that scientific law is that natural law is kind of much better than either legislative law or federal law or something, which would put a time limit on when the stem cells could be used, which is an agreement again with the President's Council on Bioethics. So I do have those. I wish we would vote down these three. And then the final one was actually a correction that was suggested by one of the speakers who spoke in opposition to the bill or stuff. Actually, the person who spoke urging some corrections in the bill. It turns out he was right on one of them. The term of art that I used, an institutional review board, is not sufficient to cover what needs to be done, and that's one of the reasons why I have Professor Kahn with me, because he's head of the organism, which is the organization which is doing the research on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Kahn's statements. Now, I would have hoped that we would have seen those amendments, because you would be presenting the best bill possible for this committee to be heard. And the way I'm seeing this bill right now, as I said before, and as was testified to, this is a Trojan horse. There are no restrictions in this current bill. There, I mean, when we're talking about a board of review for penalties, there's no. Can you tell me where the restrictions are in this bill, Representative Kahn?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Stevenson, said the three amendments, which I have spoken at each time about at each time, and no one stood forward and said they wanted them, and then I finally decided to put them in. I know while you guys were having this wonderful, informed debate yesterday on the rules, I happened to spend the entire day at a conference on stem cells at the university. So I actually learned. I learned some more things about terms of art. I learned some more things about activity. I learned, and I do have a whole big copy of the proceedings of that, which are available for members. I think the three amendments, I think we should vote down the Stevenson Amendment. I think we should look at my brief. amendments, which I think ought to be acceptable to everybody. I only thought they weren't, and then I think we should pass the vote. So.
Representative
Stevenson. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and patience of the committee. And I would hope that we would support this amendment. This amendment brings this bill into line with current statute, and that the only provision that we can restrict in the current process, in the bill in its current form, is that there's a gross misdemeanor and we don't know how to apply it. And so I think unless we can put some restraints within this bill, we have put together a bill that that is unenforceable, that opens the door to who knows what in the next 20 years. If we've come this far in the last 30 years since abortion was initially incepted to the stem cell place, what are we going to do in the next 30 years? And so how do we try and foresee that unless we put some restrictions on this process? So I would ask the committee to vote in favor of this bill. And Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call being requested. No further questions. Clerk will take a roll.
Lucadina?
No.
Atkins?
No.
Fly?
No.
Briner?
No.
Clark?
No.
Detmer?
Yes.
Eastland?
Yes.
Gunther? Gunther? Hawes?
No.
Portman?
No.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mahoney?
No.
Mole?
No.
Norris?
Yes.
Norton?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Ruth?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Slocum?
No.
Welty?
No.
There being 13 no's and 6 ayes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment does not prevail. Amendment number 82, Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment, this amendment actually deals with the issue specifically mentioning the somatic cell nuclear transfers, which is basically the cloning procedure. And I think we can argue about the terminology, but I think the reality is that if we take a fertilized egg and implant it in a host womb, it'll grow into a baby. And if we take a somatic cell nuclear transplant, and implanted in a womb, it will probably grow to be a human being as well. So that was according to Dr. Furfo's testimony last week. And I think we have federal regulation that deals with the embryonic stem cell research. That's in federal law. President Bush and Congress has dealt with that. And what this amendment does is it simply says that we need to take some more time before we get into the cloning direction of developing new stem cell lines, and so I think that's the explanation that I have. This takes out the possibility of using the cloning. And I guess I just had a question that I'd like to ask of the testifiers, Mr. Kahn. have there been stem cell lines developed using the somatic cell nuclear transfer process,
Mr. Kahn?
In humans, I should say, in humans.
Representative, my name is Jeffrey Kahn. I am a professor at the University of Minnesota, where I'm director of the Center for Bioethics. I'm here today as the chair of the Stem Cell Ethics Advisory Board. The answer to your question is there have been attempts. But there have been no successes to date.
Representative Eastman.
I guess it just begs the issue again here that we're on the infancy side of this thing, and there's a lot of research that could have there been stem cell lines developed in animals using this procedure?
Mr. Kahn.
Representative, I think the answer to that is yes, although I'm not a scientist, so I'm only speaking from my perspective as the chair of this board. There are others who could speak to that with much more authority than I.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the issue or the reason why I think this amendment is appropriate, I think we should pass it. I think we are really on the infant side of even dealing with this whole thing of somatic cell natural nuclear transplants. And it is basically the method, one method that can be used in cloning, which we have no real policy as a state. We have no real policy in the federal government except that we say we don't do it. And so I think if we're going to move ahead, let's move ahead inside of the parameters that the federal government has given us. And we could, if we're going to use stem cell research from eggs, from fertilized eggs that have been discarded, I think, you know, that's one thing that the federal government has already said we can do. Whether we agree with that or disagree with that morally, if we leave that alone, and let's just take the issue out of this bill that I think is bringing it way beyond what is really being accepted in almost any other state or nation that I'm aware of. So I would propose that we just pass this amendment, take the cloning portion out, and move it ahead consistent with federal law.
Committee members, questions to Representative Eastman or Representative Kahn, and comments? Representative Norton first.
Thank you, Chair Covina. Presenters, Representative Kahn, maybe you can just answer your perspective of this amendment and what this would do to the intent of your bill, please.
Okay. Again, this puts a restriction on what may be one of the very useful parts of using stem cell research, the somatic cell nuclear transplantation. Let me explain. I should have a PowerPoint or a chalkboard to explain it. But what is happening is that the nucleus, and there are many ways in which this can be done, but the nucleus is taken out of an oocyte, and then suppose you have someone with, you can do it in two ways. You can look at it as treatment of a disease or study of the disease. Let me talk about it in terms of study of the disease, because that's something which might really be right on the horizon. And the example that we were given at the conference yesterday was ALS. I think it would also be multiple sclerosis is another good example for this. You put it, but ALS is particularly good because you know exactly what it does to a particular neuron cell. So you put in the nucleus that comes from the patient where you know, which you know is deficient in this one gene that causes ALS, that's Lou Gehrig's disease. And what you do is you can get a set of cells which then exhibit the characteristic of this. This is what you need to overcome to have a cure for this. What you then can do for the first time, and, you know, I don't want to say that this has been done yet, but they're very close to doing this and having done it, been able to do it in mice. For the first time, you can then have this colony of cells that you can then test a plethora of drugs on. So you can do your drug testing instead of in patients, which is very difficult and very slow. You can do your drug testing on cells, which is going to be incredibly more effective. This is one of the things that we want to be able to use SCNC for. The other thing specifically is, again, in deriving a list of stem cells from the SCNC process, you'll be able to do it with the exact genetic makeup of the person that you're trying to treat, so that you will get rid of this. And anyone, if you know people who've had transplants, or if you know people who have been involved in drug testing, you know what horrendous activities are involved in anti-rejection and so forth. So this is a very powerful technique that we do not want to remove from being part of the state policy.
Representative Detmer.
And I do have an anti-cloning amendment if people want.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kahn, how many treatments have been developed from adult stem cell research?
Representative Kahn.
That's you know, it's not really relevant. It's not really relevant to this bill. I mean,
well,
we know that it, we know if you saw one of the things that we saw, one of the interesting things about that is that the practitioners who are working on adult stem cell research are some of the most vocal people saying that we need embryonic stem cell research. And one of the things which was a problem, which was an embarrassment, one of the things which was an embarrassment is the fact that one of the people at the University of Minnesota who was most involved in adult stem cell research just over the weekend actually had to admit to a mistake in the thing on that. And the answer is it's just not relevant to the bill.
Mr. Chairman, the answer to the question would be 72, according to the research ethics, on Americans' research ethics. And how many embryonic stem cell treatments have been developed through embryonic stem cell research? Zero.
We're not, you know,
Representative Kahn, go ahead.
Yeah. The issue is that basic science, embryonic stem cells have only been on the plate since 1998. It's a very, very long time for any kind, for any immediate thing. And there are, and the, this is the answer. This is why we want the University of Minnesota in the forefront of doing it.
Okay. Any other questions on the Eastman? Well, Representative Eastman himself. Yeah.
I have just one more comment. Just kind of responding to some of Representative Kahn's comments. It's interesting. The terminology is what seems to be the issue that kind of couches how we're supposed to look at this. And you know, if we call something that is the result of somatic cell nuclear transfer a set of cells, that's one way of looking at it. I mean, another way of looking at it, it's a live embryo. I mean, it could be put into a uterus and it could actually grow. And then I thought it was interesting, the two things that we were going to use this set of cells or colony of cells for were testing drugs. So we're actually taking a set of cells that actually represent a human life, and we are deciding that we're going to test a bunch of drugs on this set of cells. I mean, I just think until we know more about this process, this is an area that we have no clear direction on from the federal government. In fact, there is no clear direction anywhere in the world. And I think as far as looking at cloning as being a non-controversial procedure, if looking at this as being a non-controversial procedure is really not recognizing where the world is. And I think a simple way to solve this problem and move ahead with the bill is to take this section out and simply say that we're not going to use somatic cell nuclear transfer as a source for the cells we're going
to
look at.
Just to correct, Mr. Chairman, just to correct the misinformation, somatic cell nuclear transfer is permitted in California, Illinois, United Kingdom, Israel, Singapore, Spain, France, and Portugal, and as of last night in Iowa.
Madam Chair. Or Mr. Chair, pardon me.
Go ahead.
And it is not permitted in Canada, and it's not permitted in Germany, and it's not permitted in a number of other places. So the point is the world is very mixed on this. And I think until we have some clear understanding of what's going on, I think cloning clearly has been a point of controversy, and I think a wise thing to do at this point is to say, well, let's move the issue ahead under the guise of what we have in federal government, but let's leave the cloning issue alone until we have a better understanding of how we want to take a position on that as a state and as a nation.
I would just suggest a no vote on these. We've already voted no. It was part of the Stevenson Amendment, but let's vote no again on it for the Eastland Amendment.
Okay, no further questions on the Eastland Amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. Amendment is not adopted. Members, Representative Kahn has an amendment here that I wish you probably would have given out earlier that deals with some concerns on cloning and also penalties. I don't know. Does this committee want to see this? I mean, if they do, okay. I will offer up the A3 amendment. Representative Kahn, why don't you explain the amendment? Well, it's being passed out. I think Representative Severson and Eastland, some of their concerns may be met with this. Representative Kahn. The A3 amendment.
A3 amendment specifically deals, I didn't think it was necessary because no one is intending to do it. The A3 amendment specifically deals with the cloning, the issue of cloning. This is in the New Jersey law. This is also, I believe, in the Missouri initiative that was passed. It was very interesting, and one of the things that you talk about is you talk about what people think when you say cloning. And when a public opinion, now I know we don't like to legislate or even do science by public opinion polls, but when a public opinion poll was done in Missouri about what cloning, what people thought cloning meant, and I did get this from Representative Eastland's discussion of it, people think cloning means you end up with a new human individual, a new human baby. And so this specifically says that we're not going to do that. So this is in several laws. This is not harmful to the bill. There is no federal regulation against it, so we will be moving forward on saying that we're opposed to cloning. So I would think we could unanimously accept the A3 amendment.
Discussion, members. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. I guess the question I have is once again, we're trying to use language to kind of define a very limited perspective of what's going on. What would happen if we would take female eggs and sperm cells and put them in a petri dish and we would fertilize the eggs? We would get a fertilized egg, right? We would get something similar to what we have here when we're putting together a somatic cell nuclear transfer cell inside of an egg. The point is what we're doing is we're creating it. We're creating it for the purpose of destroying it. That's what we're doing. What the federal law says, we cannot create living tissue between an egg and a sperm and create it and use it for the purpose. We can use what's existing. That's what the federal law allows. We can use the excess eggs that have already been fertilized. We can use them, but we can't go and create more. What we're doing here is we're just opening the door and saying we can create an unlimited number of equivalent cells, equivalent to fertilized eggs that could be implanted. They could grow, and they would technically be a cloned human being if they were implanted in a cell or in a host womb. That's the reality of what we're doing here. And so I think to be in the spirit of the federal law, we should be just saying, we're not going to do this. We're not going to do the first step in the cloning procedure for anything. We should just eliminate that as an option. And so this doesn't eliminate what I'm talking about of the first step of cloning. We are going to create the cells that could be implanted, or the masses of cells that could be implanted in a womb that would grow into a human being. And we're going to use them for experimental purposes.
Representative.
Chairman, we've already decided that since 1978, when the country was exposed to the birth of Louise Brown from England, that we have already said it is appropriate to mix eggs and sperm together on a petri dish, and it is appropriate to put some of them in to grow into embryos, and it is appropriate to do whatever else with the rest of it. This actually puts some state law in place on this. I think the issue of the language in this amendment specifically defines what everyone thinks is cloning, and what other states have done in opposition to cloning. If you want to, I don't think the bill needs it. If you want to vote for it, if you feel more comfortable having an opposition to cloning in the bill, then vote for the amendment. I put it out because I felt that it does no harm to the bill, and I thought that some people I understood were more comfortable having this provision in the bill.
Representative Hartman.
And from the discussion that you gave about why you wanted your amendment, I would think you would agree. Just vote against the amendment if you don't like it.
Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, what I'm hearing Representative Eastland say twice now is that the federal government permits excess embryos that were developed for IVF to be used for embryonic stem cell research. And my understanding is the whole reason we have this bill in front of us is that is not the case. Second question is, reproduction and cloning are two different things, correct?
Yes.
Representative Khan, yes to both?
Yes.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, let me just correct the language again, being careful about language. The federal government does not prohibit anything. The only thing that the federal government has said is what federal funds may be used for. And this line, if you remember back to what the president's executive order did and what she has opposed any attempt to expand, he drew a line and said there was a difference between embryos that were created, stem cell lines that were created before August 9th, 2001, 9 p.m., and those were that created after that time. And you heard our testifier, Dr. Furfo, say actually she was the developer of two of those lines. And so, you know, and so the point is, it doesn't, we're dealing with what the state policy is, we're bringing it along in line with eight other states. And, you know,
I Representative Horne.
Just as a follow up, Mr. Chair, to the representatives that oppose this bill, my question is, what do they propose that
we're
do?
We're on the amendment right now.
With embryos that are not going to be used, that have been created for in vitro fertilization, should we enact a law that prohibits the discarding of those embryos? I mean, it's kind of, I don't understand the objection.
We're still on the amendment, though. Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not a doctor, and sometimes the terminology we use is not, but the federal government clearly has drawn a line and said that there are some stem cells that are out there that are available for use. Those stem cells came from embryonic stem cell origins. And I think that's what I was referring to. The question that I have, and just to illustrate the confusion I think that's out here on this issue, that needs to have some clarity and some discussion before we move ahead, is could you tell me then what is the difference between an embryo and a somatic cell nuclear transplant cluster? Can you tell me what's the difference biologically? What's the difference?
Representative Khan or Mr. Khan?
And I should say an embryo in a petri dish, or one of a somatic cell nuclear transfer cluster of cells in a petri dish. What's the difference?
How they were formed, how they came, you know, how they came about.
There's what's the difference if you implant them in a uterus, in a host uterus?
Representative Khan.
That's beyond my.
That's a clone. That's the clone. That's what we're talking about here.
The issue of cloning is completely dealt with the amendments I put before you. If you don't like it, vote against it.
Well, I think the issue is clearly that we are going down a road that is very, very dark, and it's very unclear. The other issue, going back to Representative Severson's concern early on, when we talked about the conceptus, in the definition of a conceptus, it comes from fertilization to 265 days. So what do we call the process of somatic cell nuclear transfer? If we're creating the equivalent of an embryo, is that fertilization? There's lots of questions here. And I think that going down this road of just saying that we're going to open up this door is really a Pandora's box. I think we could do this in a much more appropriate way to take this to have passed my amendment, which we didn't, and so it's probably going to pass. But I think the concern is here is that we're moving in a direction that is way beyond where I'm comfortable and where I think most of Minnesotans are comfortable. Because if you ask most Minnesotans if they agree or if they think we should be doing cloning, they would say no.
Right.
And if you explain what this is, I'm confident they would also say no.
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, just to this amendment that's before us on the table, Representative Khan, does this amendment close the door on cloning or not?
Representative Khan.
The answer is yes. Thank you.
Okay. We have the amendment in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. And all we have the bill. If there are no further amendments, any further discussion or questions? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Khan. I think, you know, what we've got before us today is a bill that at its best is going to open a door to what we cannot see at the end. And I think, you know, when we talk about state funding of abortions, and I think there is a large majority of Minnesotans who oppose that issue, this goes to the state funding of doing the same thing only on the embryonic level. You know, when we're talking about embryos, human conceptus, the very thing that they envisioned 30 years ago, we've got upon us now that is killing babies that may not have reached their full potential, but we're saying for scientific purposes and for the good of humanity, we have the technology to do this. And my question would be, we can, should we? And those are the ethical issues that we have stepped into with in vitro fertilization, which Representative Portman was alluding to. We have the technology, but should we? And this bill needs to, you know, I think if we take a look at the corporate knowledge of everybody here who knows anything about somatic cell nuclear transfer, you'd probably be able to fit it in a thimble. And yet we are crafting legislation today that is going to open the door to the future on things that we have no idea of. And so I think the issue needs to be, how do we proceed in a rational manner, as Representative Eastman was talking about, how do we proceed to protect life in the future, not just to select who's going to get this treatment, but how do we protect the lives that this is going to address? I would hope that members would see that this is clearly in violation of state statute, and that this does not fix state statute, and that you'd vote this this bill down.
Okay, further discussion? Representative Eastman.
I just want to make sure we have a roll call on the...
roll call has been requested. Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to ask Mr. Khan to describe the function of the board of which you are a chair.
I would be happy to, Representative. The Stem Cell Ethics Advisory Board was created now about 5 years ago, appointed by Frank Serra, who was mentioned before, the Senior Vice President for the Health Sciences of the University. I chair it. It's a 10-member board. It has half internal membership and half external. We are advisory to the stem cell researcher at the university when they face issues which are either not addressed by university policy or by other existing oversight committees of the institution. So just to clarify that, stem cell research is often overseen by other oversight committees, such as the Animal Care and Use Committee, the Institutional Review Board, which reviews human uses in research, the Office of Regulatory Affairs of the university, and sponsored program administration. So we have a range of existing oversight entities, all of which have specific and separate roles that may relate to stem cell research. When there are specific ethical issues that come up that are not covered by the other committees or by existing policy, then they make a request to the Stem Cell Ethics Advisory Board for review, which we do usually by in-person meetings two or sometimes three times a year.
Representative Detmer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sir, are you part of the University of Minnesota?
I'm a faculty at the University of Minnesota in medical school.
Okay. Is it difficult for the University of Minnesota to obtain private funding for embryonic stem cell research?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. You'd be better off asking someone who deals with those issues.
Do they currently receive private funding?
Again, I don't have information to that effect.
Representative Detmer.
Okay. No other questions.
No further questions. Clerk, take the roll on the bill.
Rukavina?
Yes.
Pastor. Pardon?
Yes.
Why?
Yes.
Briner?
Yes.
Clark?
Yes.
Detmer?
No.
Eastland?
No.
Gunther? Todd?
No.
Portland?
Yes.
McFarland?
No.
Mahoney?
Yes.
Moe?
Yes.
Nornis?
No.
Norton?
Yeah.
Poppy? Yes. Root?
No.
Severson?
No.
Slocum?
Yes.
Welty?
Yes.
There being 12 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails. Representative Khan's bill is re-referred to Public Safety Committee as amended.
Mr. Chairman, may I make one comment?
Representative Khan, we have a number of people here that are But you make a quick comment, Representative Kahn. Can you keep it in a minute?
I don't want to embarrass a member of the committee in case they are embarrassed, but I do know you are a recipient of an exchange of emails where someone who spoke in defense of this bill was told that they were actually espousing the same thoughts that Hitler had espoused in fascism. Now, it's particularly difficult for those of us who lost most of our families. We don't have extended families because we lost most of them because of Hitler, to have this kind of a comparison made. So I do wish members of the legislature and members of the committee would be a little careful of their language, particularly when they're talking to someone in the disability community who also takes that kind of slight very, very seriously. So I just want to make it as a general comment.
Thank you, Representative Kahn. Okay. Members, thank you for everyone's patience and input, and I think well thought out input from both sides on this issue. Next bill, Representative Mariani, House File 771. Representative Mariani, welcome to the committee. Representative Moe, would you like to move House File 771? Is that resolution, members of Congress? I intend to move it. Representative Mariani, no one else wants to see this. Can I go right to the floor?
Mr. Chair, I believe that's correct.
Okay, Representative Moe?
Yes.
Representative Moe moves House File 771 be recommended to pass and referred to the House floor. Representative Mariani, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I appreciate it. It sounds like a lot of work in this committee, so I appreciate you being able to get this for today, because we have a number of young immigrant students here at the Capitol today, and a number of them are here to observe the proceedings. Members, I will be very brief. I have a couple of testifiers as well. I've asked them to be brief as well. House File number 771 is a resolution that would memorialize the President and Congress for comprehensive immigration reform. And what we're trying to do, members, is really couch this thing in terms of Minnesota's, our state's need to compete in the global marketplace with the necessary amount and types of talented workers that our society demands. The resolution speaks to that issue. It also talks about and acknowledges that immigration issues, even though they're federal issues, they have very, very, very real impacts on our states. As you may recall, the last year there was a traumatic incident involving Worthington, Minnesota. And regardless of how one might feel about the actions of the federal government, there's no question that that action had tremendous reverberations throughout the southwest corner of the state. It disrupted the economic activity for a while in that state, as well as the social relationships in that state. I know our law enforcement officials there locally were very stressed over that particular issue. And so the resolution is offered as a way to really exhort Congress that of all the issues they're dealing with today, this year, that they really need to prioritize this issue, and they need to hear from our states in order to do this. This is not just a Washington, D.C. issue. The resolution goes on to acknowledge our need for immigrant workers. It specifically talks about the need to set a realistic visa target that works for our economy, that works for our states. It recognizes that part of our work here with any group of individuals is to be able to have them adjust and integrate into the life of our state. And so it seeks for federal assistance. And, of course, I always talk about the benefits of immigration as far outweighing the cost. But there are costs. I mean, there are costs to citizens as well. And so we have very real issues in regards to emergency medical assistance, to some law enforcement issues that this reality conjures up. And so we want the federal government to partner with the states in providing necessary resources to deal with those issues. We also ask for resources to help us incorporate our immigrants into our states, particularly around civic and English classes. And so I think I've hit on most of the themes, Madam Chair, and I would ask my testifiers, if they're here, Mr. Keller and Mr. Myers, to come forward and offer some brief comments for you today.
Thank you. Just please identify yourself for the record, and then you can go ahead.
My name is John Keller. I'm the Executive Director of the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. I'm also a member of the AFFIRM Coalition. AFFIRM stands for the Alliance for Fair Federal Immigration Reform here in Minnesota and in Washington. Consists of faith, labor, nonprofit, and immigrant communities working together to address immigration issues. On behalf of all of us, and especially on behalf of the newest Minnesotans who will hear of your positive and serious considerations today at the state capitol and have hope renewed, I thank you for this opportunity. Minnesota has always been a state of immigrants. In the 1890 census, it revealed that 40% of the residents in Minnesota at that time were born abroad. If you compare that to today's standard, the 2000 census showed that 5.3% of Minnesotans were born abroad. From 1990 to 2000, here in the Twin Cities, we saw an increase of foreign-born residents of 127% in the Twin Cities. These trends continue today. At the same time that people are arriving at greater numbers in Minnesota, the unemployment record in Minnesota, and especially in rural Minnesota, is at record lows. Minnesota's economy is absorbing, and one could even argue depending on the newest Minnesotans who are arriving. At the same time that rural Minnesota shows that baby boomers are retiring in greater numbers, immigrants and refugees are keeping businesses, schools, and communities thriving. House File 771 encourages, in very clear terms, that the federal government needs to match our 21st century immigration needs to today's reality in Minnesota. To meet the needs of all immigrants and of Minnesota and of the United States, comprehensive immigration reform must include four principles. It must unite families in a fair and expeditious manner. It must protect human rights and worker rights. It must strengthen the border. And it must provide willing workers and businesses the chance to meet, again, our 21st century economy's needs. It's important for you to know that the resolution for comprehensive immigration reform in front of you in House File 771 is part of a growing trend by states and cities to assert pressure on the federal government to do its work in fixing our immigration system. Last year, the federal Congress passed two distinct bills, one in the House and one in the Senate, but could not arrive at a compromise to solve our immigration problems. When the federal government fails to act, state and cities pick up that slack. Last year, states began wading into the realm of immigration law, law that is designated by the Constitution to the federal government, in an unprecedented fashion. Across the United States, there were 570 pieces of immigrant-specific legislation introduced. 84 bills were signed into law in 32 different states, from Arizona to Wyoming. Clearly, the states are restless and would like the federal government to fix the immigration system. By taking up Resolution HF 771, you'd be joining the likes of Georgia, Illinois, New York, and California that have looked at and resolved that the issue has to be resolved by the federal government. Cities similarly have passed resolutions like this, including Boston, Chicago, Cincinnati, Cleveland, El Paso, Grand Rapids, Michigan, Lexington, Kentucky, Los Angeles, Portland, San Francisco, Santa Fe, Seattle, and the Western Governors Association. Minnesota, through this resolution, is insisting that the time is now, that the 110th Congress and President Bush must seriously address and fix federal immigration system in 2007. What this really means is that the debate must begin in earnest in the next few days, the recent news has suggested, but certainly no more than in the next few weeks. And it must be resolved by August 2007. It's not simply enough to repeat that the federal immigration system is broken, that the laws are in need of reform, that we know. I hope to emphasize it through one specific family law example, and I know that Sam will address business. The current laws impact the families that we serve, as well as families throughout the state of Minnesota. For example, a married couple, a U.S. citizen wife, and a husband who's undocumented has been working in the United States for 7 years, the family has 2 children who were born in the United States. They come to our office, they ask what the laws allow, and we assert that they do have the right to file a petition to normalize the husband's status. We let them know that the filing and the paperwork in the United States will take roughly a year and a half, but at that point, the devil is in the details, as they say. As a lawyer, I must inform them that the current processing requires the husband to leave his wife and citizen children, return to his country of origin, and be subjected, in a worst-case scenario, to a wait of up to 10 years, a separation from his family of up to 10 years. In the case of a petitioner who's a permanent resident, as opposed to a U.S. citizen, that wait can be stretched to 18 years. The fact that the petitioner is born in the United States, has 2 U.S. citizen kids, the family depends on the income to stay above the poverty level and to maintain their mortgage, does not change the circumstances or the choices they face. Comprehensive immigration reform, as resolved by HS 771, will speed up the process to allow families here in Minnesota and across the United States to stay together and to remain together. Diverse voices argue for immigration reform for economic reasons as well, as Sam will touch on. The Federal Reserve Chairman, Alan Greenspan and Ben Bernanke, Wall Street Journal, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, Ladians and faith communities nationwide have all already said that this economy depends on the normalization of work status for the workers who are already here contributing to our economic prosperity. This unique and diverse array of voices unite, perhaps for the first time, on the common demand for economic purposes of comprehensive immigration reform. HS 771 adds, at this critical moment, Minnesota's voice to that of other states and cities that have already pointed out to the federal government that we are waiting and expect them to take this issue up. Through the passage of House File 771, you would be stating that Minnesota requests that the federal government promote family reunification and provide businesses with the needed workers that our economy demands. I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. And the next testifier, if you just want to state your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Sam Myers. I'm a lawyer in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I have an immigration practice law firm, Myers Thompson. I've practiced immigration law for about 30 years in the state. I started a law clinic at William Mitchell Law School. I was privileged to serve as the chair of the International Institute of Minnesota that gives you the Festival of Nations every year, coming up here pretty soon. I teach an immigration law class at the University of Minnesota. I was president of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and I was active in 1990 lobbying Congress for the 1990 Immigration Act. There's now 15 years later, we're back at it again. It's a privilege to have the opportunity to speak with you. I'm here asking you for something very specific, and that is that in about 2 weeks, when 500 people are going to descend on Washington to ask them to exercise their leadership and actually engage in passing comprehensive immigration reform, I would like to have a resolution from the state of Minnesota that I can bring to the members to give them some support. You know, immigration reform, if you watched it last year, was largely a political byplay. It was a campaign issue. It never really got too far in Congress. There was a very good Senate bill, 2611, that was passed. The House bill was very different. There was never a conference committee. There were a lot of hearings around the country where people spoke their political, you know, voices, but ultimately nothing resulted. Well, now everyone's elected. Now they can go do their work. And what they need is a little cheerleading. I was asked by this body to come over and advise some members of the Senate what, you know, the state of Minnesota could do about immigration. And I said, well, you know, there's not much because it's basically federal law, but there is something you can do. You can act as a cheerleader to our elected representatives and senators at the federal level to exercise their responsibility. Years ago, when we passed immigration, the last immigration reform, 1986 and 1990, we had to divide the illegal immigration, if you want to call it that, into one set of bills in 1986, and that netted us employer sanctions and legalization. And then 4 years later, in 1990, was when we tackled legal immigration and we increased the number of quotas. There was a reason for that. The reason was it was just too hard to get together on both of those issues. Well, we stand at the precipice now of being actually able to accomplish both things in one bill. Senate Bill 2611 is an excellent piece of legislation. President Bush liked it. The Republicans in the Senate liked it. The Democrats in the Senate liked it. It got stopped in the House because I think there was concern among certain House members that there were issues that they just couldn't resolve and couldn't agree on. I think with the inspiration from states and localities, as John was mentioning earlier, coming up from the population out in this country, we can communicate to them that comprehensive immigration reform is really essential. Why? Because, you know, enforcement costs money. This bill that we think is going to be introduced in the Senate and the House pretty soon is going to provide a lot of money for border enforcement and interior enforcement, $78 billion worth for the enforcement. Legal immigration actually generates money. It generates fees. You know, the average employer, I don't know if you know this, but the average employer taking an employment-based immigrant from start to finish pays about $10,000 of government filing fees just to get that person a green card. And that person generally goes on and becomes very successful. That's what we're asking for. Immigration doesn't predict our economy, but immigration reflects our economy. The highest point of immigration we've had in this country was in about 1989. It shot up to 2 million people in 1 year, and then largely as a result of legalization. As you recall, that was when we had one of our biggest economic booms ever, and we boomed right through that increase in immigration. Immigration moves in the employment sector. Immigration fills a void. It fills a void in the farms, it fills a void in the meatpacking plants, and it fills a void in the scientific halls of our corporations, and that's why you have such a wide diversity of corporations that have asked for comprehensive immigration reform. The American, the AFL-CIO, Carlson Companies, Medtronic, General Mills, you name them, they're all asking for comprehensive immigration reform. Over 900 businesses and universities and hospitals called for an increase in the H-1B, the technical visa status for people with college degrees and employment-based quotas. There's a 500 economists and five Nobel laureates from the Independent Institute have asked that the immigration quotas be increased to allow more employment-based immigration to this country. In fact, Congress has never been in a better position to pass comprehensive immigration reform than it is right now. It's got a bill. It's got 2611. It got through a pretty contentious judiciary committee. It passed it out to the floor. They've got the structure. They've got a structure in the is just the Constitution of Congress net right now that's far less hostile toward comprehensive immigration reform. And what it will give you is $700 billion of enforcement money. It'll create a hard-earned path to citizenship for undocumented workers to generate more payroll and income taxes and to bring those people up into the culture and not hiding and using fraudulent documents. It will decrease backlogs, it'll unite families, it'll create legal statuses where none now exist, and it'll hold employers accountable for complying with the law. It's an excellent statute. It's an excellent opportunity for Congress to do something in a collaborative way they're sort of looking to do right now. So it would be a perfectly timely opportunity for you to express the will of the state of Minnesota in accomplishing comprehensive immigration reform and give us something to take to Washington to show your federal colleagues. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Myers. We're actually just running short on time, so just so you're aware of that, did you have one final testifier? Or?
Madam Chair, we have a student here, Alejandra Cruz. And then I think we're ready to...
And I just have to tell her, I'm sorry, but to keep it brief. Thank you.
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Alejandra Cruz. I'm a student in Minneapolis. Thank you for having me here. And more than anything, I would just like to say about my experience as an immigrant student and as an immigrant worker. My family is immigrant. It's an immigrant family who comes here to work hard and to contribute to this economy. More than anything, we believe
and I believe that we should have a fair treatment. Why? Because we're just here to work hard and contribute to this economy, as I said. Many of us, many of our families have struggled a lot, and not just my family, but many out there. This is real. This is happening. There's many, many families out there who have been suffering a lot from many things, not just immigration immigration reform, but many other things like the DREAM Act and other issues too. What I would just like to tell you is that I'm here to represent all of those immigrants who are out there, and I would really ask you for your support and let you know that we are going to be here and working really hard, and the students, we're going to keep working really hard and try to show you that we are part of this society, and we would really like to be part of this country too. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cruz. Are there any questions for the testifiers? Chair Rukvina.
Elandra, is that how you say your name? Excuse me.
Yes.
Right here.
Yes.
You said you're going to school in Minneapolis. Is that where you've had all of your schooling since you've come to Minnesota?
Yes. I came here when I was a freshman in high school, about 6 years ago.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else with questions? Representative Hollis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can somebody explain exactly what a resolution is? Does it have a Senate companion? Does it have to have government? Does it have to have governor's signature or anything like that? Or does it just kind of end with agreement between the Senate and the House?
I'll stand to be corrected by counsel, but first of all, there is a Senate companion. I think it's being heard tomorrow. And I believe it does not require the governor's signature. It requires an agreement between both houses.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you.
Might want to check with counsel, but I think I'm...
Ms. Novak, Ms. Thomas?
Madam Chair and members, that's my understanding, too, that it needs to be passed by the House and the Senate.
Any other questions? All right, then we will renew the motion to recommend this to pass and send this to the House floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Then the motion is approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Representative Enzo.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Chair Rukvina.
I would move that... Representative Anselt's House Bill 874 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education and Workforce Development Bill.
Thank you. And Representative Anselt, welcome to the committee. Just please go ahead with your presentation.
Madam Chair and members, thank you very much.
Okay.
The community of North Ulm is a nice little town in extreme northern Minnesota, population 230. It's primarily a logging town. It's 75 miles southwest of International Falls, the county seat of Couchiching County, 45 miles north of Bemidji, in the middle of nowhere. But it's a nice little town, and unfortunately, back in July of 06, they had a fire, and they lost their community center, municipal building, village hall, totally destroyed by this fire. This request, this bill before you is one of those nice requests for a little bit of money to help this little community construct a new municipal building. Current funds available are approximately $400,000 with their insurance settlement. The total cost of the project is approximately $1.1 million. The difference and the amount of money I'm asking for in this bill is $691,000, just a small amount of money. And in this building, when it gets constructed, will be new city hall chambers, congregate dining facility for area seniors, facilities for Head Start classes, and other community functions. I'll try to answer any questions that the committee may have. That concludes my presentation.
And thank you. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Zella, is this about the same size as the one that was burned down?
Actually, it is about the same size. The footprint is very, very similar. But, of course, the old one was about 80 years old, and I can't place a value on the replacement.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. And Representative House.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative, why are we hearing this in this committee? Why wouldn't this be bonding?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative.
Can I help with that? I'm assuming, and I certainly don't want to put any words in my fellow Iron Ranger's mouth, the freshman member of the Iron Ranger delegation, I might add, the youngest member, not by age, but by seniority. But I'm assuming because of the geographic isolation and the fact that a bonding bill wouldn't pass till next year, and then probably the by the time the bonds are letting that we're out in 2010 or so, that this community needs this building as soon as possible. But, you know, I think Representative Mansell might want to add to that. I'm wondering why it's here.
Representative Mansell, we'll give you the opportunity to...
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Rukavina, to the first part, what you told the committee is totally false.
you being younger?
And to the second part, yeah, we need, the community has requested general fund appropriation to get on with building this community. They really don't have a place to meet. They really don't have a place for the city council to conduct this business. And they certainly don't have a place for congregate dining and child care and all of the other activities that this little community needs. So respectfully, Representative Rukavina, this I request your support on this modest request.
We've got a number of people who have questions for you, Representative Anzalk, so we're going to go on. Did you have anything more, Representative Haas?
No, thank you
okay.
very much.
Then next on the list, Representative Welty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The more I'm looking at this, I just have a ton of questions. Now, first of all, you know, Representative Rukavina, if we're going to take this out of the higher education budget, I know of a lot of other things that we could fund with $691,000, and I'm just wondering why we have it in higher ed and why don't we send it to a different committee so that they can take it out of their budget. And second, my second question to Representative Anzel is looking at... And I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm just raising this question if there's another budget that it can be taken out of. Anyway, my second question then will be this. Representative Anzalk, would you help me understand, city governments, aren't they similar to county governments where they can let bonds for projects or not? I need clarification on that.
Okay, Representative Rukavina maybe is going to step in. And
well, first of all, Representative Welty, this is the higher education and workforce development. We have deed in this committee, the Department of Employment and Economic Development, which I believe will be testifying Mr. Gelman tomorrow. So I'm assuming that even though this doesn't imply it, that this request is through the Department of Employment and Economic Development, which gives grants a lot of cases for small municipal governments like this. Even though it doesn't say it, I'm sure that is what my good friend, Representative Anzell's former lobbyist for the labor construction people who's been around here for years meant when he introduced this bill. So,
all right.
So it's not coming out of higher education's budget. It would be coming out of BEAD's budget if it's approved by this committee and when we're putting the bill together at the end of the session.
Representative Welty, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairwoman Poppy, for and thank you, Representative Rukavina, for providing me with that clarification. See, I didn't see the department listed in here, so that's why I was wondering, you know, could we share this resource with another committee? But then my second question I still have open to Representative Ansel. Would you just please clarify, do cities have bonding authority or not? And why is your city not able to generate the revenue to build a building?
Madam Chair and Representative Welty, yes, they do have bonding authority, but there basically is nothing to tax. I mean, there is there is so little here that we beg of the committee to provide relief.
Thank you. Let's move on. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ansel. I don't know if I can follow up on those types of questions, but what is the statewide significance of this project?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Detmer, I think it's of statewide significance that all of our communities, large or small, be healthy and nice and clean and be available for all of the state citizens to enjoy community services. Whether you live in Forest Lake or Foston, you should have an equal access to community services, and that's what this will do. And I'm sure you can see the benefit to the people there of having this facility.
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, spoken like a true politician over there. Okay. Thank you.
I'm just shuffling along here.
All right, next, Representative Searson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Ansel. You know, I had a couple of years ago, I'd gone up to the city of Perm. And they have a outstanding center there. Came to find out that the people of Perm had come together and actually funded that completely without any state funds. And so I think it sets a kind of a dangerous precedent. It kind of slaps people in the face in the city of Perm to say, you can raise $6 million, but here in a little town up north, you can't raise $600,000 for our own particular area. So I think, you know, when we move forward on this thing, we've got to take into account that each of these cities take pride in the community center, and a lot of times that pride is amplified when they're able to raise the funds locally to make sure that the things that they are addressing are provided locally and not from the state. And not that I think that it wouldn't be a great thing, but I think that local communities have a responsibility for this type of thing.
Yes, and Representative Rukavina wanted to touch on that.
Representative Severson, I don't know how far Perm is from St. Cloud, but I'll bet you it's not as geographically isolated as Northholm is. I would say that the state revenues that go to St. Cloud, and maybe Mr. Berg could tell me what the just the money that goes to St. Cloud state is a year. It's astronomical. That money it goes to professors and that live on Perm that can afford to then raise some money. So I think, you know, your analogy maybe could use a little more thought before you try to.
Only about like that on the map.
All right, we're actually at the just beyond 2 o'clock, and the committee should be concluding. But we have five people on the list. Is Representative Severson, is that your last comment on that? Okay, yes. Representative Moe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anzell's defense, I just wanted to answer a couple points. The Northholm is on the longest state trail in the state of Minnesota, Babe the Blue Ox Trail, which becomes the Paul Bunyan Trail, well over 200 miles, a tremendous state asset that have direct access to this facility. They no longer have a warming house or anything to use for that state trail. The second thing is Northholm is the only place that people can shop or go to a restaurant or anything unless they're driving all the way down to Bemidji. The communities such as Gemmel and other communities around there that virtually have nothing. And for Perm, Perm has Tuffy's dog food company, you know, which I get to get my dog food from. And there's no employer nearly that size, and one-tenth of that size in Northam. So I think the apples and oranges, Mr. Stevenson.
I think we need to try to wrap this up in the next 3 minutes. Representative Mahoney.
Well, I'm going to champion this bill because it's the best impression of a Greg Davis bill I've seen for a long time.
All right, Representative Gunther.
Almost like a brass band.
Madam Chairman, if all else fails, which I hope it doesn't, because I can identify with communities that size, try a small cities grant. There is small cities grants through DEED, and they are designed just for the purpose you're talking about, as well as several other programs from DEED. So there is hope if all fails, and I promise I'll work for you.
Thank you.
Thank you for that suggestion. Representative Norness.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick note. I commend you for looking up for these small towns. I grew up in a small town. They have a lot of needs. I admit that. I was just going to suggest that maybe this go on an additional track just to be a little extra security, just for security. I think this still is a bonding project, and rumors are there will be a small bonding bill this year, and I'd say get in there and fight for it, because this may have a chance. You never know.
Thank you. Another good suggestion. All right, let's turn to Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be real brief. Northam is a great community. I lived in Roseville for a few years, and we drove through Northam a lot, and I enjoyed that community. And I would just say, what's Plan B and C and D? I think that's what kind of the last people have commented on. I mean, there's a number of options that are open, and this is something that needs to be done. So I support you in it, but it money is going to be paid.
Thank you. And Representative Welty.
Thank you, Chairwoman Poppy. And this is the last question. Representative Enzo, what is the population of Northam?
230.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Enzo. And any other final questions? No? Okay. Well, okay. Representative Rukavina moves that House File 874 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay.
Thank you very much.
Chair Rukavina will move the minutes for the last meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Motion approved and meeting adjourned.